Spirits of French Lick is proud to introduce the Lee Sinclair 4-Grain Bottled and Bond Bourbon. This 4-year-aged, double-pot distilled, non-chill-filtered bourbon has creamy, round, and lifting notes with caramel and vanilla, followed by apple, mint, graham cracker, and ginger, as well as cardamom. The finish is slightly French walnut, resolving the sweet, fruity, almost ground cherry and white pepper. Our spirits are available for tasting and purchase inside the French Lick Winery and Distillery. Spirits of French Lick. Respect the grain. Please enjoy responsibly. This is Alan Bishop, head alchemist at Spirits of French Lick. Be on the lookout for our brand new bottled and bond Solomon Scott rye whiskey. Made from a mash composed of 65% rye, 35% corn, and 5% victory malt. This 5-year-old 100-proof rye whiskey is a throwback to early 1800s style rye whiskeys of the Ohio Valley. Named after the legendary Daisy Spring Mill distillery owner turned moonshiner Solomon Scott of Paoli, Indiana. Remember, drink responsibly and never drink and drive.
That is Kenny Fuller. He is an up-and-coming country star in Tennessee that works with Luca Mariano, who is that distillery is a friend of the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. And last time we had them on the podcast, he was like, hey, I should do a theme song. And
That's cool. Yeah, so, yeah, he did that. I mean, he's awesome. He really is, as you could hear.
So
he's every bit of as awesome a person as he is a singer.
So we have a special guest. I'm Tiny. This is Xavier.
But greetings, everyone.
Dan Stansberry. He is a local radio morning show host here in our area. And I listen to him pretty much every morning on my way to work.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks. I tell people these days, you know, radio is that thing that knew Metallica was cool before Stranger Things. You know what I mean? Like we were in on that. Like, you know, we were trying to tell you guys Metallica was a big deal for a while. You know what I mean? So, like, thank you to Stranger Things for reminding people.
It was a good, thank you for that. Isn't it amazing that how everything, there's certain things through, the release of, it's no longer just the three networks and then cable which controlling everything. When you got into these streaming services, all of a sudden there was a much bigger audience release of what used to be, you know, older music, you know, newer music and that kind of thing. It didn't seem to be, there wasn't that much control, as much control over it as there is.
Yeah, it's a very exciting time for both video and audio entertainment. I think scripted entertainment, I mean, even though like Stranger Things is big and things like that, like it just, nothing seems to rival live sport. And so like, that's where that's going to get, you know, interesting for, you know, TV and scripted entertainment. Audio listening is at like ridiculous levels right now. And people are finding, you know, podcast about, you know, things that they're passionate about, much like you guys and, you know, other things. And I think that's great. I think it's awesome that, you know, people are getting to, you know, I always, you know, there's a commercial I once heard that I, you know, that I liked. It was for a university that said, you know, talent is usually equally applied. Opportunity is not. And like, that's a really great way to sum up like how podcasting became such a big deal. Like, that's a great way to like put the finger on the pulse of why it exploded the way it did, is because there are talented people everywhere, and this gave them an opportunity to show other people that. You know what I mean?
And actually get heard, you know, like you said, right. like where
there's no limit now.
Right, right.
There's absolutely no limit now. And like that's what's interesting about the podcast.
Maybe
space.
It's because you carry a TV studio in your hand now.
Yeah, and that's just it. It's like and I think it's a very exciting time because people can get very in depth about things they're passionate about, you know what I mean? Like which is obviously what you guys are doing here.
And you're that's correct. And then there's an aspect where even when what would you say commercialized the entity that takes over and tries to control, it seems like that the medium evolves so you still can have access. Like, for instance, to get to be a YouTube star right now is a difficult thing to do.
Sure.
I mean, if you're famous, no. But if you're like us, it's kind of like you got to really put the time and effort and there's not a lot of reward. But then they came out with the shorts. And they came out with TikTok and they came out with Reels on Facebook. And that all of a sudden opened up a lot of stuff for us because we're able to put little short bits of funny things and get a lot of views, which then starts turning into subscribers. And then they start listening to the real
content. Yeah, see, so back in the day in TV and radio, those were what were called teases.
Right.
And like, so, like, the internet's very good at stealing everything from old media and pretending they invented it. But you're right. And that's a very, it's a very effective tool. And they say now the next big thing that's going to pop off is you better figure out how to make 1 second vids.
Yeah.
If you don't know how to do that.
No,
put you in the casket. It's over. It's over. You're done, old man. It's over.
And I am an old man.
Believe me. I mean, I'm not hiding any gray here, obviously. So,
well, you know, I'm hiding a shit ton.
Is that right? Is there a little Just for Men going on?
A little.
I was told no. I came home with the box, and she was like, "What are you doing? No. I like it."
That's the wife.
Yeah,
Mrs. Xavier. This hair started out as a COVID mane.
Yeah, keep it.
And she's like,
whatever they
I want. Like it. And it's like, what Mrs. Xavier likes, Mrs. Xavier gets.
My dad said, just wait in the living room and wait for your name to be called. You know what I mean?
That's
how I go about my life.
I basically did everything possible to eliminate all the possible hair that could make me old. But if you look at my arm.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to start shaving my arm, man. It's like I'm 57, soon to be 58.
Okay,
so that's that, and he's in
I'm 61.
60s, yeah. 61.
So, yep.
So we're having a damn good time, and
I'm a little younger, I guess. Then
right.
I'm 61. I still got my hair, but like I've said on the podcast before, that's because at a very early age I knotted it from the inside.
I can't lie. Keeping hair would be important to me. Sorry.
Don't.
Is that offensive to the bald men?
No.
Because if you can pull off bald... Keeping hair would be important to me, too. But with him, if he grew hair tomorrow, he wouldn't look right. He pulls off that look.
That's what I'm saying.
Really
if
well.
If you pull off bald, it is. It's a very good look. I just can't do it.
That, I'll show you the painting in my living room when you go up, but that's actually me. So I did have a lot of hair, and I used to wear it long. I mean, like, I used to try and be Jim Morrison when I was really young.
Really?
Yeah.
You should do a pod about that one, Doug.
I'll show you the self-portrait. It was a self-portrait. I'm actually a big
Morrison fan?
Oh, yeah. The Doors?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Big like, fan. Like, there's nothing that I haven't heard.
Interesting.
All right. So what are we going to start off with? Okay. So you were talking about Trace, and we were talking about Colonel Taylor, right?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man. I'm trying to get them on there. We all artists, man. We gonna have this like,
bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now. I gonna lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
Yeah, I believe he had said, and I'm excited to be here, and one of the reasons why is I don't know a damn thing.
Well, he just happens to have several expressions.
So we got some small batch E.H. Taylor made by Trace.
Okay.
It is their... this one is probably... They make different... they make barrel... Like, what happened with American Whiskey is they got their small batch. And a small batch, for somebody who doesn't know, is they take a certain amount of barrels.
Say a dozen or less.
Well, in this case, probably 600.
Well, what we had the other day was a dozen. Well, I'm going to say at a minimum, but yeah, it can be as small as relative.
But,
it's
but what they do is they put it all together so they can keep the flavor profile consistent.
Okay.
Up until about the 80s, consistency was like the master distiller's biggest challenge. Trying to put the same thing in the bottle year after year. Because
a Big Mac is a Big Mac is a Big Mac.
Right. And that's what they were always trying to do.
Okay.
But I'll just pour a little. We're going to stay little. Is that little to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
So
how many drinks are we going
to have? No, like I said, I know you work tomorrow and so do I. So we and you have to get home. So in this case, in this particular, it's a small batch. It's not like a Jim Beam or a Buffalo Trace. Buffalo Trace is in small batch. That's their signature. They can mix thousands of barrels together to make that and keep the flake. But this is a smaller run. There's no, but you know, when they say small batch, there's no rules on small
batch.
It's
scalable,
you know.
Obviously.
A small batch can be 3 at a local distillery and 600 at Buffalo Trace. So this is this glass that you're tasting in is a Glencairn. It's called a Glencairn. You're going to go home with one of our Glencairns. It's got our Scotchy Bourbon Boy logo. But what you want to do is just kind of roll it around in this. Show him that it'll roll on the half the time just straight up spill it. But it'll actually roll on the bar to roll it around. It
allows you to aerate the
so
the
color is important.
So much like a glass of wine.
Yeah, you look at the color, and the color there is like a caramel color. It's not, it's a deeper caramel color.
I also don't know anything about wine.
But
except how to drink it.
See what's happening on the sides right there? You're going to know something right there. See those drips dripping back down? See how they're sticking and not dripping too quickly?
Yes.
That tells you they're called legs.
Okay.
So some will have thick legs. Some will have thin legs. You know, that'll tell you how watery the bourbon is. So the fact that it sticks to the glass like that and then kind of comes down, you know that there's a viscosity in there that's more so than like
a higher viscosity with more surface tension than what.
Now this is a bottled in bond,
so higher quality. Yeah.
So this was created. This guy E.H. Taylor created the bottled in bond or supported the bottled in bond act. It was the first act that they used to sell whiskey out of barrels.
Yes.
So you could the person selling the whiskey filling up the bottles would stick shit in the barrels that wasn't good.
And anything from distillers iced tea to tobacco juice to sometimes really bad
cherry
stuff.
Juice. I mean, they did a ton of stuff to it. It was not every place, but it was no
There were some unscrupulous people that would do that.
Right. So to make, because, you know, you get these leather flavors and stuff like that in there. So this Bottled and Bond Act basically sent government agents to watch over the barrels until they came out and got bottled. And when you had this stamp on here that, you know, right there, and then you basically, it's 100 proof. It's at least 4 years old. It's guaranteed that it's 4 years old.
And then a new oak barrel.
Right. And then also distilled in one distilling season. So the grains didn't come from 5 different grains, you know, one season. So you're guaranteed something when you get a bottled in bond.
And it's stored in a bonded warehouse. That's where the name comes from, where the distiller pays a bond fee in return. He gets the government supervision. It is locked. It's guarded. And I believe, please jump in and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that his work in process as it ages isn't taxed till it leaves the bonded warehouse. So that was his advantage. Okay. Now, I don't know if that was originally part of the Bottled and Bond Act of 1897, but that's how a bonded warehouse works today. So now all bourbon, to be called bourbon, it has to be it has to have an age statement unless it's 4 years more. If there's no age statement on
two.
It. Yeah.
If it's under 2, it has to have an age statement.
Oh, I thought if it was under 4, it had to have an age statement.
No. 2.
Okay. My mistake.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So
Four for bottled and bond, but under two.
Two gives you straight whiskey, and four gives you bottled and bond. Right. Okay. And so basically now it's been more so for popularity, advertising, and whatnot that they've resurrected the bottled and bond. That wasn't around for a while, but a lot of the distillers are doing that again. Just for tradition, and it meant quality then, it means quality now.
Well, the industry has exploded, right?
Yeah. And, you know, we were down there in Bardstown in 2019, and they were just expanding like crazy then. I know one distillery had the capacity in their rick houses of 24,000 barrels, and they were expanding their capacity to 70,000 barrels because of demand. Now, that's same distillery is building more, and talking with multiple people in the industry, I forget who said that just to us not long ago, that the ceiling is nowhere in sight. They have not found the ceiling of this demand.
I don't know if they ever will.
Yeah.
Well, no,
it's alcohol,
right?
People are going to drink it if they make it,
and that's just it. I mean, there's a reason to drink alcohol when things are good. There's a reason to drink alcohol when things are bad. There's a reason to, you know what I mean? It's like, it's woven into the fabric of people. For sure it is. You know what I mean? Having been a server, you can kind of see it. You know what I mean? You see, I've always said in the bars I worked in, I saw the same 25 people every day, but in every bar I've worked in, I've seen the same 100 people. You know what I mean? And that's, it's just, it's kind of, if you enjoy it, you enjoy it. You know what I mean? And I have in my life, you know what I mean? And, it's a social lubricant, obviously. It makes people very talkative. And I like that about it. I was talking about it on the show just this morning, as a matter of fact, like, I miss how big going to the bar to watch a football game used to be, because you would walk in and everybody would be strangers, but by halftime you had 30 new friends.
Exactly.
And whiskey can do that.
Or even going to a Browns game, going up into the beforehand, and you know, and it's still
concerts, same thing.
It's coming back this summer. We'll have to see what this next football season's like.
Yeah.
Unless they decide to pull out another, you know, what crazy thing, who knows. But at the same point, it's kind of like I've gotten, initially, I don't know how much I jumped on, but I'm still not quite there yet to go to 80,000, 78,000 and get packed in there with everybody jumping around. I'm not quite there,
I think I'm going to get there. To see, I just went and saw Motley Crue.
Okay.
And Def Leppard and Poison
up nice.
At First Energy, and that was pretty packed. Yeah, man, I'm out there. I'm out there doing things.
Well, now we went to Kentucky Bourbon Festival last September, and it was about 5,500 people in that area, but it wasn't the same as like going to Lambeau Field. In you know, when you go to Lambeau Field,
and you're sitting
in
the closer than we are.
I mean,
now.
You all have to stand up as a group, otherwise it doesn't work. You know what I mean? Otherwise, you pop out and shoot up in the air. That's how packed they got you there. So, you know, and my wife in 2020, right when everything, she thinks that early on when we were at the Packer game, she went up in the warmth. I stayed in the cold, and she said there was something going on. She came back, and she pretty much had the symptoms initially of, you know,
is that right?
Of COVID before. Wow. COVID was COVID, you know, but who knows? Anyways, that gets us back to this. Now, when you're drinking, well, you just took a sip. Now, your tongue has four different, your tongue pretty much has four different zones for tasting, or your mouth.
Okay.
You've got the front tip, which is going to detect sweetness. That's where you're going to get your caramels and your butterscotches and anything sweet coming off. Mid palate, you'll start to pick up, you might pick up some fruits, you know, that type of a note. And then the side of your palate starts picking up spice. And then at the back of your throat is where you pick up a lot of the wood, oak. You'll pick up some really hot spice.
Okay.
Then when you swallow that warmth, it's called a hug. They call it a hug. You're looking for a warmth. It's like the Kentucky hug. It's what it is.
The hug.
Now, they call this the Kentucky chew. Is that you take it, and that will spread it out to cheek and whatever. And what I love about this bourbon, now this is, it's all right if like you want to put this on ice.
Yeah.
Right? It will change the flavor, but overall it'll also change its drinkability. You know what I mean?
Sure.
We're just sipping right now. And so when you get that, it'll cover your mouth and then you think about what you're tasting. And you get, this is a whiskey man's, this is not like a dessert or something that's bringing out chocolates or whatever. In my opinion, Colonel Taylor is it was one of the better whiskeys where it tastes like whiskey, but it has some really nice sweet notes and a little bit of caramel on the front. So it's like what you want to drink. It's like, this is a step above Buffalo Trace.
I always feel, and I apologize, but I always just feel so lost when people talk palate to me. And I think it's something I don't, you know, some people are super sensitive to it and others are not. And like, I never feel connected to those said statements. You know what I mean?
Okay,
like
I never
feel like I can, like I've done this with wine too, where I've had things and I've drank, it's late. Sorry, we're approaching my bedtime.
That's okay.
Here. I apologize on that one. But I have drank things that are really, really good and that I've enjoyed. But if I could drink a bottle of it and sit down and be like, well, I could tell you I liked it and I could tell you it kind of tastes like this. But like really breaking things down like that, even food, which I love, and it built a massive body that I can't get rid of. But I don't, but like I'm not finely tuned, you know what I mean?
It's yeah, you know,
what you like.
As I was saying before we started,
you know what I mean?
I am more of the blue collar drinker. Either I like it or I don't.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Okay,
that's why I wanted to pick this one to start. This one's supposed to taste like whiskey, but
it tastes like whiskey,
and it's supposed to have like what would you say? It's not supposed to like light you up and turn it on fire like you can't drink, but it's supposed to have a nice little kick.
So for a more common whiskey, what would this be most like? I guess that's what I'm curious about. As a guy who knows nothing.
Okay, but this in itself is similar. This is for what would it be most like? This is what you'd compare other things to. Like if you'd say, oh, this is Jim Beam, Jack Daniels or whatever, or you're trying, this is what you'd want those to be.
That is the comparison.
I mean, people, this is a $39.99 bottle of whiskey that on the secondary market all day long, people will pay $150, $200 a bottle because you can't get
it. Because it's hard to get.
Yeah. You know, like when Tiny got me my first bottle, you just walked in and said, oh, there it is. I'm going to grab it.
And it was $32.99.
Now you wait in line. And you have to know when it's going to be released.
So I got another bottle. Once I get into one and it's running low, I got to get one. I had to be at Giant Eagle last Saturday at 4:55 in the morning. And I was third in line for five bottles.
All right.
Now, just in my defense, I love going into the lines. Because when I go into the lines, I sell the podcast. So anybody I talk.
Oh, sure.
So that's so that's motivation for me to get up.
I totally get it.
I get a bottle.
I would be at a record store for a vinyl I wanted.
Right. So that you
could. Same thing.
Do you remember waiting for concert tickets at Ticketron Ticketmaster?
I told a story on the air not that long ago, and I swear to God, a kid called during the commercial break and thought I was lying. But I was telling a story about how I slept in a sleeping bag.
Oh, yeah. Outside of Montgomery Wards or whatever. Oh, yeah, okay.
I'm from up in the Cleveland area. Outside of Randall Park Mall, where you could go get tickets. I think it was in one of the, I forget, it might have been May Company or whatever. But one of the department stores then there. And we slept outside. And a kid was like, you slept outside in a sleeping bag to get concert tickets? What are you, a moron? And I was like, no, dude, I'm old.
That's the way. We didn't have the internet.
I didn't have SeatGeek, bro.
There was no internet.
Then. We had to be like, really.
Want to say hi to one of our viewers. Greg Snyder's joined us. Hi, Greg.
How you doing?
Glad you could join us. Greg is a great friend of the podcast. Yeah, very experienced in the whiskey industry as a master distiller. And as just an administrator, he's worked for a lot of different companies. He is now the master distiller for Chicken Cock. He also...
I was looking to see right behind. I know what I got, behind there, but I think I actually...
We're looking for a bottle of your product, Greg, to hold up.
Oh, it's in the high end. It's over there in the high end.
There it is. It's right over there. I see
exactly.
It.
I'm not, it, yes, yeah. Island Rooster. But Island I'll, Rooster. But
go ahead.
So, yes, he's a friend, and we'd like to say hi to Greg.
Greg,
and,
thanks for listening.
But even to the point where I grew up in Milwaukee, so Summerfest.
Yeah.
And Summerfest started in the 70s, okay? And the first Summerfests, I just remember when I was a kid, I remember getting down there about 2 o'clock in the morning, waiting in outside the gate. Then they let you in, and it was general admission for all the main stage. So, like, the Stray Cats, the Go-Go's, In Excess. But it was basically then you waited till 9:30 in front of the gates, and it was just like a straight sprint to the front. So we got to see some really good acts, you know, second row.
When Karen and I went to see Fleetwood Mac in 1980, I remember it was like...
I was 4 years old. Sorry, man, but people do that to me all day.
I was 19.
Young dudes make me feel old.
But anyhow, basically, I think I was out. I wasn't out all night. I think I got there like at midnight. And then I was there till they opened at whatever it was, 8:30 or 9 o'clock in the morning, and got my tickets. After that, Karen and I, who were just friends, were going steady.
Well, I'm jealous. They're one of my all-timers, and I saw them, but I believe it was 07, and Christine McVie wasn't there.
But we saw Christine,
and I'm a big fan.
When she rejoined the group in 2013, we saw them over in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, see, I didn't get a chance.
Karen and I have seen Fleetwood Mac probably six times,
is
maybe
that right?
Seven times.
Good for you.
And
it's a good guy.
And we saw Stevie Nicks with Rod Stewart back in 2011 or 2012 when they did what was called the Heart and Soul Tour.
Yeah,
that was a good concert.
I saw her in 1984 on the Wild Heart Tour.
Nice. Stevie Nicks?
Yeah.
I love that album.
That was right before she needed surgery.
I have that album. I have that album.
Stand Wild Heart back. Was a great album. And so was Belladonna. They were both great albums.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that one. But I was even...
She's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and she, I think Fleetwood Mac, in the end, probably produced... one of the better older person concerts.
But, you know, you can call them an older person concert, but there's one thing that Fleetwood Mac does, and maybe the Rolling Stones you'd throw in there, and maybe just one or two others, is they're not like you just named a litany of artists that you went to see that were performing together, whereas Fleetwood Mac can fill a stadium or a concert hall by themselves as the only ticket. You know,
and harder to do these things.
Get the Stones and maybe a couple others that I'm not thinking of right now. And that's what elevates them to a different level.
I mean, just the... Uh-oh. That's okay. It's all right. Nope. It's just a shaker, so it doesn't matter. It just went...
As long as whiskey ain't draining out on the floor.
Nope. Just recent, if you really want to get into... Oh, it's like Loverboy and REO Speedwagon. Loverboy had a scare, whatever, but if you've seen... Is it Reno? Mike Reno? Have you seen him?
I have not.
Oh, he's old and a little bit heavy. Okay.
Heavy.
Yeah. But he's out there.
The age will
He's got the bandana on.
Still. With the bandana.
I cannot. So they had to skip the last couple. So it's been a big thing that REO Speedwagon's been covering for them and doing their set, singing the Lover Boy.
Really?
And I'm just like sitting there going,
wow.
This is why I don't get that. Tickets.
Yep.
For, hey, I saw REO Speedwagon in 1982, 1984. Wow. I was watching them in their, you know, I saw the High Infidelity tour, you know. But I don't want to go watch them now.
another person popped on here, Joe Neff. Hi Joe, thanks for joining us.
All right. So, if you want to fit, tell me what you think when you taste it, put it in and just let the tip of your tongue taste it. What are you tasting on the tip? Can you get a little bit of caramel off that, like a sweetness?
Well, it's definitely sweet, yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of times you'll get caramel, you get honey, you know.
Vanilla.
And the more you do this, like... consistently, the more you start to bring those flavors out. Cherry is a big one. Some people get cherry, you know. But there's no, when you're drinking it, there's no wrong answer. It's just like we talked about it. I was on another podcast last night, and I said lobster. Most people like lobster, right?
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah,
but there are people who don't like lobster. But that doesn't make them somehow that they're a piece of shit.
No.
You don't like lobster, you bastard.
No, people only objected to the chocolate-covered lobster. That's all.
Well, apparently you have not been on the internet. Because, like, that's exactly how the internet
works. Yes, I know.
Like, you know, is that if you don't like lobster, you hate all things sea living. That's how the internet works. That's how
comment sections work. I love lobster, unfortunately.
There's
very few things I don't like.
I think it's the butter for me. more than the lobster. Yeah. It might be the lobster. It might be the butter for me.
I think it's the bite of ribeye steak and then the bite of lobster. And, you know, of course, I don't do that anymore, but I used to.
Now, the last thing that's there is the finish. Now, look, I mean, you could just see how that just the drips, the legs.
Yeah, goes to the
yeah. Yep. So the last thing that you got is your finish. And the finish is basically the taste that's left over when it's done.
Yeah.
So you got the body, which they call the mouthfeel. Like, how much does it feel? Like, when you swishled that around, did you notice your cheeks lit up, the top of your mouth lights up, the tongue under your
That's like alcohol, much like going to the dentist. Yeah, I feel like I got Novocaine in more parts of my mouth now. Like,
right.
It's very similar.
That's a big body. Now, a Basil Hayden that we were talking about before doesn't have a big body, and that's why a lot of people go to it, and that's how they start off drinking higher-end liquor by doing the 80 proof. I mean, this is 20 proof higher than the Basil Hayden. But this is like the whiskey, you know, this is one of the top ones everybody wants.
Yeah.
So now this here is Rare Perfection. Now this is, they say that E.H. Taylor
is a bold statement.
Six.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty cocky.
6 and 7 years. But what they did is this distillery bought barrels from all around the world, and there's Canadian whiskey in there. And then they mix it with some of the distillate that they're distilling, and they make these blends. Now we know Matt Jackson. Matthew Jackson from, he's the master distiller there.
Yep.
So when we were there, 9/15/21, he signed the bottle. And
Not only that, but he made himself available to personally take us on tour. Just like Greg Snyder has and will be doing again. We know some wonderful people in this industry that are so generous with their time.
At 14 years?
A little bit.
I know. I'm going a little bit less.
Snort. Like I said, you're getting me close to my bedtime here.
Right. And we'll do...
Yeah, give me just a snort of that.
So now this just one...
Ooh.
61, 14... I believe this is at barrel proof.
Just a...
I'm going to give you this.
It smells a little... I would say mellow.
Yeah, this is...
That's enough. Thank you.
Did you take your new glass or your old glass?
I don't know.
Yeah, you took your old glass. It's okay.
That's all right. I don't
like to mix some of the really good stuff with the other stuff. It kind of gets in the way.
But we're mixing that's how us weed dudes are, too. You know what I mean? That's how us weed dudes are, Kai, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Same thing. It's like, you gotta
believe it.
You gotta keep this with that.
Right.
My buddy back in the day used to say that about getting pulled over. He's like, if I have... you know, two or three different kinds of weed on me, I need a jury of my actual peers, like, because they're going to try to get me on some trafficking. He's like, and I ain't trafficking. This is consumption. I don't want to mix this with this. And that's very much the same thing. You wouldn't take, you know, two different, you wouldn't mix those two bottles together and be like, hey, let's go out tonight. Like, that would be crazy.
Now, but there is some people who take and buy their own, all their own stuff. And then they make their own blends.
Like fountain drinking? Like kids?
Like they just go, they go like this and they mix it until they like what they want. And then there's actually bars that will do that.
So, all right. So this is, I'm very interested now here at this. Because I would assume, maybe wrongfully, that a high-end whiskey like this, if you were to even mix this, like let's say with like a soda type thing, that would be frowned upon.
Well, some people, but like he said... With Fred,
drink it how you like it.
Drink it how you like. I mean, Fred's wife Sandy loves the family Jim Beam family recipe for making whiskey sours. I mean, when you go there, you're having a whiskey sour. They got it down to a T. I mean, they have the right amount of ice, the right amount of thing. Hey, blend that, and it's just a fantastic.
So, having been a server, so it really does just come down to how well a cocktail.
You know, I mean, there are some people will frown upon that. I myself, my preferred way to drink a higher end bourbon is straight up.
Okay.
And okay. my wife, who I brought over to the dark side in 2019, and she decided she likes bourbon, that's her preferred way to do it too. But, you know, if I'm going to have a mixed drink, I would probably go with maybe something not that quite high end, but there are people who want that in their mixed drink.
I was going to say, one of the reasons why he invited me, one of the reasons why I was happy to accept is I am, in my job sort of requires, I'm an interested person, right? Like, so like, I'm very curious about things. And I like alcohol. I, you know, having been a server, bar owner, and well, bar customer. but like, my knowledge of whiskey was as simple as walking up and telling a bartender Jameson and ginger for 10 years. You know what I mean? Like, well, that's
nothing wrong with that.
That's about what I know. So when he asked, I was like, yeah, because like, I'm gonna get exposed to things that I am curious about that I don't know anything about.
You know, you made me think of something. Something I haven't drank for years. I know you'd mentioned Canadian whiskey. I used to love to drink Canadian Club, and I still drink it now and then. But back in the day, I used to like to drink CC with Squirt.
Squirt.
Yeah, remember the
yeah. Well, Mountain Dew is people do that.
But Squirt's a little more bitier. It's not as sweet as Mountain Dew.
Yeah, it's not.
And that made quite a good combination. Although people who are now sipping their Canadian Club out of their Glencairn glasses are probably, you know.
Now like this
sacrilege, yes. but that was the way I drank it.
The same proof, 100.7 as this, but this is going to drink way different. So this has rye whiskeys. It's got Canadian whiskey in it. Now there's some people.
It smells very different. You can tell just by that alone.
Now I pick up a ton of like a butterscotch, butter rum.
Right, but you do get some rye spice. Yeah. You do get some rye spice off of that. Okay,
see, here's what's interesting about that. Like, going back to like palate and, you know, sensibilities and things like that. I would have been sitting here going, what is that? What is that? What is that? But the moment you said that, I'm like, yeah, he's right about that. Like, I can connect it once suggested, but I can't necessarily place it.
Yeah.
And that is the skill.
He does that to me all the time. He'll say something and I'm thinking, what are you talking about? Then I'll taste it.
That's again. What it is in a chef, right?
It's like,
that's
okay,
what it is. Yeah. Right, but in a distiller that I mean, they, like, but they have.
By golly,
that.
That's the taste.
They have aroma kits. I have an aroma kit that has all the different smells of all the different. When you're distilling, there's negative smells or like acetone can come off, which is nail polish. It's all stuff that's in the beginning of what they call the heads that they basically get rid of and redistill. The poisons that would kill people in the gin bathtubs and stuff like that. When you know what you're distilling, you basically have the heads, the hearts, and the tails. The heads are dangerous, so you got to know what you're doing.
Those are runoff.
The hearts are where the heart of the run of what you distill. And then the end tower, is bitter. Storage. So you can leave a little bit of the bitter.
That's interesting to me. I would have never known that.
Yeah. So they're always keeping that, and then that's what they stick in the barrel. Now, like bourbon, you could stick it in the barrel for 1 second, pour it out, and then that barrel can't be used for bourbon, and you can call it bourbon. It's just got
to
go
into bourbon has to go into a new
charred oak barrel.
Charred oak barrel, be it, and it can be American oak or French oak, right?
Just a new charred oak barrel. Right, it can be American white oak, Missouri white oak, French oak. It doesn't matter as long as it's new charred oak barrel. Now, Maker's Mark changed it a little bit. And that's one the one we'll taste. They basically drop toasted oak staves into the barrel after it's been aged for a while and that adds these flavor profiles that are crazy. Like they call the one I have right there is called Crumble Coffee Cake, and it's got us. If you when you get it, it kind of has the feeling.
I think the biggest shock to me in learning about bourbon is the barrel and how much the aging process of that liquid.
The start of the show. Huh?
Liquid.
What? The barrel? Seems like the start of the show.
Well, as that barrel expands and contracts over those 2 years or 4 years or whatever you want to call it, and that liquid then absorbs the oak tannins and the sugars in that barrel. I never realized how much that plays into bourbon more so than other whiskeys. And, you know, the barrel is really important. And the person who's, we were fortunate enough to call our friend and is watching us now, Greg Snyder, he can tell you, I mean, he knows his barrels. He knows where he picks barrels where he knows they've been grown. You know, he'll go to where the trees are growing.
In West Virginia, in West Virginia, the shade side.
On the shade side of the Blue Ridge slower. Mountains. And he will tell you about the circle. The circles in the growth rings and how they're spaced apart.
More condensed.
And if they're more condensed and what that, how that affects your whiskey. I mean, he's into it at that level.
He picks every stave for his 600 barrels, okay? He hand picks them for the growth rings so that there's two or three more than if you were just picking from regular oak. It's crazy.
All right, so I'll tell you what I love about that. So, like, it may on the surface almost seem excessive, right? But in a world where people, myself included, complain about how everybody half-asses everything.
Mm-hmm. No, he attends to every detail.
Like, it's amazing. And then also not surprising when an industry explodes like that, because people are, like, I always say people's BS meters are getting better and more sharply tuned than ever before.
That's true.
And so, very much so, I would have to imagine, right? And so, like, they're, you can weed through all that stuff now, and people can find authenticity. That's the one of the things people give. That's the number one compliment I get most is like, dude, you just say what you think and it's real, right?
Right.
And so, and you care and you're passionate about what it is. And like when somebody puts something like that into it, it's, you can tell. I mean, I wouldn't know. You're right. I don't know about sides of mountains and I think that speaks to them. But like, I'm glad somebody does. Is my
that speaks to Greg's passion. You know, talking about people being passionate about what they do. You know, I heard a story once that has nothing to do with bourbon, but a group of professional golfers, and I don't remember their names. Ooh, I just remember the one was Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
They were just practicing and they were doing some practice putts there at the end of, they'd done a round and they were doing practice putts. And they said, hey, you know, you're going to be done here, Tiger? Yeah, pretty soon. I want to get this right. So they go in, they sit down, they have a couple of drinks. They're going to order supper. They go back out. Hey, Tiger, you know, he's still on the putting green. He goes, I just want to get this putt just right. They ate dinner. They had an after-dinner drink. They're ready to leave. It's getting dark, and Tiger is still lining up this putt. He goes, I have to get this right. And that's an example of someone who is extremely passionate. That's why Tiger Woods is Tiger Woods.
Or was.
It's...
Yeah, he's getting older, but Tiger Woods in the day.
It's where, we're going to be all right with Tiger.
Time is everybody's enemy, that's for sure.
But it's this intersection of passion and obsession. And, like, if you get right in that zone where just enough obsession to where you can still, like, have a family and they recognize you, you know what I mean, and all that. But where, but at the very end of passion, where it meets obsession, that's normally when you find where what my father would have called rubber meeting the road.
Exactly.
And who people are. And, like, when you see it in product, there's a reason why people get excited.
And Greg is so attentive to process. And also, who you mentioned, Alan Bishop. I mean, he is so into exactly the nature of the grain, how it was grown, you know, what season it was, what he's using, how much of what. I mean, what they can tell you about different aspects of this, it blows your mind. It absolutely blows your mind.
Has it almost changed your ability to doing this pod and meeting people who have all of this knowledge and who are making these things you love, having been in the radio industry and seeing behind the scenes sometimes in the music industry, it's almost kind of jaded me towards some songs maybe or some artists I once liked or some things. Has it almost changed your ability to, like, have a glass
It really has.
Bar and just kind of drink it and just kind of casually sit around.
It depends on the mood we're in. If you just want to drink, it doesn't matter. If you're looking for, you know, like Tiny was saying, to capture a mood or to, you know, it's the end of the day. He doesn't have his bosses around him, be it the ones he works for, the ones that he's married to, and he wants to have something, then he's looking for something that is a little higher end, a little special. it strikes him a different way. He's gonna draw a certain taste from it. So to a certain extent, that was a desire that prior to the last 3 years, neither of us ever had. We didn't know the difference. Ignorance was bliss, yeah, as they say.
But coming down to your actual question, and where this is like where you could say that it's you're in your industry, that if that's what's happening, it's frowned upon. You know what I mean? Maybe you're not as objective as you should be. But in my opinion, one, I could tell you that if I just go to a restaurant and I don't know the chef and he prepares, I get a really good meal, I'll come home and I'll say, wow, that was a good meal. But if I know the chef, he's preparing dishes specifically for me. And then you're sitting there having drinks with him after, you're having a good time. That's an epic meal. So just like if you're sitting around, okay, if you were sitting around with Kiss in their, you know, just while they were hanging, and all of a sudden they did a jam, like one song where they just were fucking around jam. Yeah. And you're there. Do you really think that you're there at that time and they're aware of you? That makes it so much better than if you're in there where just, or you're just backstage, you know,
okay.
Backstage, they're still just performing for all the people, but you just got a personal performance, and there's nothing wrong. I think if you're getting a personal performance from them, I really think that from your standpoint, it's probably one of the greatest moments in your musical career.
Yeah, I was kind of curious about it because, like, I can't, as a radio person, I can't listen to a radio station and just, like, listen to it. Like, I hear, like, why did they transition from that to that? And, like, dude, you can't say that and then do this. And then,
right,
like, I critique it too much. I'm not necessarily about, you know, the distiller. I'm saying, like, having so much knowledge about the whiskey itself, has there been a, like, okay, have you lost appreciation?
Does it become more of an exercise than a hobby? Sometimes.
Yeah, that's sometimes. That's a good way to say what, yeah, I'm at. What I'm failing, yep, miserably as a guy who communicates, yeah, for a living. Yeah. I'm asking.
No, for me.
You articulated it just fine.
For me, I'm just on edge of the next experience. And what I found is these people are going to be going down. Most of them are going down in history because Booker No is already written and Jim Beam is already part. These are people of, you know, Fred No is the seventh generation and Freddie No, his son, is the eighth generation master distiller of Jim Beam. They're going to be on bottles in 100 years. They're going to, you know, people are going to know,
yeah,
them.
And I want to expound upon that for a minute.
Well, let me finish and then you can expound.
Oh, I suppose.
Yes. So what I'm saying is you meet them, but they don't have that knowledge. They're not arrogant. They're hardworking. They're appreciative of everything. Like, you talk to them and you hang out and you're talking for, like, I got to have an hour and a half with Fred No, talking about whiskey in the industry and when the glass shortage was just starting, and just sitting there with them like he was my dad.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Just no different. They treat you like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty much what I was going to say. I've never seen a group of people, we just mentioned Greg Snyder. We talked about Alan Bishop. Greg is probably not sitting around twiddling his thumbs, being in the position that he is, saying, gee, what am I going to do tonight?
Right.
But he chooses to listen to us. That's the caliber of people you're dealing with in this industry. The nose, they will sit down and chew the fat with you just like they've known you for years. They're just the nicest, most genuine people. And there's a lot of other people out there. We talked about Matt Jackson. We had a great experience with Brent Elliott, who's a master distiller for Four Roses. And, there's a bunch of other guys out there whose names, because I'm 61 years old, I'm not remembering, but we've had the pleasure of working with you. I have not met the first sour, dour person yet in this industry. They are just an awesome group of people.
That's good to hear, man. I've had, again, in the radio business, I've had bands that I've idolized, that I've met, and I walked out and I was like, you know what?
That sucks.
It's a little tougher to like that song, yeah, now.
Right. I agree. Yeah, I agree. I know. Same thing.
Don't meet your heroes, they say. You know what I mean? So that's great to know that I mean, that not only is the product good, but the people are too.
They are good, and that, and I like to think they help each other. You recollect the events and the story better. Tell them about the Heaven Hill fire and what everybody else did.
Well, Heaven Hill in the
80s, make Evan Williams.
The lightning struck their rick houses, and it spread to 7 different rick houses, and eventually burned the distillery to the ground.
Jesus!
So they basically had to keep product going out, and Jim Beam, Maker's Mark, everybody pitched in to distill for them while they rebuilt their rick houses and their distillery.
They helped them out.
And that's this whole community, because they aren't competing because they can't make enough. You could just keep throwing. Now, Alan Bishop, with this Alan Bishop experience, when we went there to be a part of it, we moonshined in his back property.
Lovingly referred to as Hell's Half Acre.
You're right. And we actually made moonshine and took moonshine away.
Yeah.
And he invited us down there to be a part of it. And then we're on, you know, on the Alan Bishop experience. That's kind of awesome.
It's real awesome. So, Alan is the kind of guy that you may be a stranger when you're first meeting, but you're a friend, if not a relative, by the time you leave. He's just that awesome.
I mean, he does reenactments. He goes to all the different areas in Indiana, and he actually sets up a still and distills like they did.
He doesn't like to call himself master distiller. He calls himself lead alchemist of the spirits of French Lick. Mm-hmm. They make the William Dalton, Matty Gladden.
But even meeting you. I mean, seriously. I mean, that's something that there's no way. I'm listening to you in the morning, and I know how to use Twitter, so that was good that's what you like to do. But at the same time...
Yeah, I was shocked. I was like, what would you guys want a novice for? You know what I mean? Like, I figured, you know, people would only be interested in, like, people who had real knowledge. And I got to be honest with you, so I've been, for, like, the last 15 minutes, dying to ask what I hope, what I know is sort of a silly question. But there is a television show that I absolutely love that's called Parks and Rec. And on it, Ron Swanson is absolutely obsessed with Lagavulin. Uh-huh. Am I saying that right? Is that as good as they had made that seem to be?
Yeah,
I figured alcohol guys would know. I mean, I didn't know that. Like, Ron Swanson made it seem like it was like...
Anything Ron Swanson is awesome. Yes.
I mean, if he's in, I'm in, right? Like, that's my guy.
Right. But Scotch is more of... that is an acquired taste.
Yeah.
But I can give you scotches that are peaty and smoky, and it might not be for you. But then you can do scotches that are fruity and fresh. So Scotch in itself is so much older than bourbon but the people who came here brought the stills from the same. You know, they're the same stills.
And a lot of Scotch today is aged in used bourbon barrels because they can only use bourbon barrels once for bourbon.
See, this is where people get confused because you get Scotch whiskey, bourbon.
Scotch whiskey, the biggest difference is the primary grain is barley as compared to corn.
Okay.
Then the other thing about Scotch, which really separates it from Irish whiskey, is that when the malt first germinates, when it's first sprouts, they dry it by blowing peat smoke over it, and that's where it gets its smoky taste. Now, that being said, some of today's scotches are just ridiculously peaty. And I don't know about you, but I don't like my whiskey tasting like 5,000-year-old sheep shit. But a little bit of smoke, like if you have a Chivas Regal or a Johnny Walker, is quite delightful. And I'll tell you, Johnny Walker has an expression out that we reviewed there at the end of the year, the beginning of this year. Johnny Walker High Rye. So it's a Scotch whiskey with a high rye in the mash bill. And I'm here to tell you, it is fantastic.
All right, so we're getting close to having to finish up. So let me tell me what you think of that. I mean, the difference. I mean, you're not drinking. This is not a whiskey. This is more, I would say, a dessert type of thing. It's way sweeter.
Yeah, definitely. Mellow is the word I'm going to use again as far as taste. Comparatively there. Mellow, definitely. I could see lighter, a more dessert base. I actually prefer it, personally, for me.
Now, $39.99, $179.99. Big difference, right?
I have a tendency to do that.
No, but
with golf clubs.
But too. I will. I agree. This is a great whiskey. Yeah. For me. And but this here has some flavors and notes that you just. It's so. It's delightful.
Thanks for telling me that. After I drank it, I would have almost felt bad drinking it before you told me what it cost before.
No, don't feel bad.
I feel like you're wasting it on
No. So what, look, I've had my son on. He's a gin drinker. And so I've had him on a couple times just trying to move him in that direction. He has a friend that drinks whiskey. As he says, I'm trying to slow him up by bringing him on the podcast because he drinks with.
Well, yeah, I used to be a gin drinker too, and about the third time I blew it through my nose at 4 o'clock in the morning, I decided that I ought to lay off.
Now, there's a couple things about good whiskey that you can throw in. The barrel is charred, right? They char it. Like they char 3, 4. There's different levels of char, but most of them have about an inch thick of charcoal. Inside. Okay. So what the charcoal does is it acts exactly like the filter on your Brita water filter, charcoal water filter. Doesn't add flavor. It subtracts negative stuff that's in the whiskey.
And that's what makes Jack Daniel's Tennessee whiskey patented is because they have charcoal filtering after the distillation.
Before it goes in the barrel.
Yeah, right. Before the bottle. Yeah. And that's what makes Tennessee whiskey is that, however, was it 6 feet of charcoal filtering that it goes through, and as Jeff Tiny accurately stated, it's a subtractive process.
But then also, right where the charcoal ends and the wood sugars and the wood begin, the sugar in there is caramelized. That's where you pick up those sweet flavors.
Okay,
because it goes so the longer it's in the barrel, the more time it goes through that charcoal filter, the more time it goes through the caramelization, and then the hotter it is, the further deeper it goes into the wood. So if it's a hot summer, it might actually go, the alcohol might even, they call it the angel share, where it evaporates out the barrel because it actually goes completely through the piece of wood.
And something that most of our listeners probably know, but Dan being a novice may not know, in the rickhouse where they have several floors, you know, anywhere from the, just one floor to 6 or 7 floors, obviously, it's going to stay hotter up top because heat rises. They are constantly rotating the barrels. What was on top goes to the bottom, and the bottom goes to the middle, or whatever order they do it in to normalize the effect of the temperature and the aging through the years.
I know I was breaking balls on the name before, but that, you're allowed to call it that. This was really good. It really was.
So, I love Irish whiskey. You said you liked Irish whiskey.
I want to have a snort of that too.
So, here you go.
Well, I think I still got this
one. Oh, you have that one? Okay.
Yeah, because
so there you go. All right. Yeah. So, Redbreast is considered one of the best Irish whiskeys now. It's like people go crazy for this whiskey. Okay. Now, this is Redbreast 12. There's Redbreast Cask Strength. There's Redbreast 15. But this is a reasonably priced. I think this was 80.
Okay.
So, but everybody still goes crazy. Now.
Yeah, I have a Jameson 12 year. My buddies all seem to like that.
Jameson's a fine product.
For a real whiskey, right? Like what I would call it. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's served me well for a long time.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, no, honestly, Jameson is right there with Jack Daniels. I mean, they made their name, I mean, during Prohibition when they were just...
Again, little here.
Yes, I know.
Got an early wake up time.
All right. So then we'll finish.
Yeah, see, that smells like Irish whiskey to me.
Yes, and Irish whiskey is very...
More barley, yeah.
But now, see, the problem with Irish whiskey with me... For whatever reason, it is an 80-proof whiskey, okay? I can drink 100, 125, 130-proof bourbon, and I'll have 3 or 4, and I'll be fine. I can still talk. I can still walk. You give me 3 good pours of this, and I won't remember anything till the next day. It's like, for whatever reason, Irish whiskey just...
It stimulates your system to absorb the alcohol.
This has gotten me through the podcasts in so much freaking trouble. And I didn't realize it was Irish whiskey. I just thought, oh, it was one time. Then on Father's Day, she gives me this. I have a couple pours, and all of a sudden I'm like, how is it 8 o'clock? She's like, you fell asleep 4 hours ago. I mean, I passed out and was like, so I really have to watch when I drink Irish whiskey.
Interesting.
So
now
this, what's unique about this is these are the cereal grain. Once again, this is this will be barley. Right. And it's because it's Europe, because that's what they do in Europe. They don't grow a lot of corn. But this is this has some like plums.
Yeah, Irish whiskey definitely has a different taste to it.
It's got a nice fruity, sweet kind of thing. It's not trying this. This is like what that tries to do. This almost tries to be like desserts.
Yeah,
where this is like the fresh summer salads, fruit salads. You know what I mean? So all different whiskeys are always trying, you know, how they produce them and how they go about and what they're using, all different things. But you really can taste that barley grain in that. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they definitely have a much different taste. I got converted over actually a little bit off of Irish whiskey, and you guys will probably laugh at this, but when I was living in Oregon, they switched me over to Pendleton.
Okay.
Whiskey quite a bit, and that has to me a much more Canadian whiskey type flavor and feel to it. So yeah, much more crown like, I would say.
Right.
To me.
What's in its mash bill? Is that a red winter wheat that they use on that, or
now you might as well, you know, ask me some Greek stuff.
That's the same thing. I can't answer that question.
I don't know the answer to that. But they were wild about it out in Oregon. Now it's not as, I mean, it's not gonna blow the doors off on the price tag or anything, but you know, for a decent, halfway decent. But they kind of moved me off of Irish whiskey out there with that, because I was, like I said, I was a big, you know, Jameson and Ginger guy, but they moved me over to Pendleton pretty fast. A
couple weeks ago, I wasn't feeling well over the weekend, so I watched all 6 seasons of Peaky Blinders.
Yeah.
Talk about, and when you watch them back to back, you feel like, you almost feel like you're going to die of lung cancer and alcohol poisoning.
Peaky Blinders was a fantastic series.
Yeah, they're intense.
I mean, it's just like every single second, Irish or Scotch, and they're just always down in it, so. Anyways, all right, so did you have any more questions?
So I do have one question.
Okay.
For both of you. And I'm interested to hear the answer, and I'm hoping what I will get is a different answer from both of you. Okay? So,
First off, before you start, I have one question for you. Does your mouth still feel a little numb?
Yes, a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. Tiny May or roofie juice.
Is that right? Yeah. Oh, yes. supposed to tell us the day after.
Just so you know. All right, go ahead with your question.
So, like, the Mega Millions, right? It's like 400 and some million.
No, it's 830 million.
Okay, so all right, so $830 million.
So
$830 million. You have the winning lottery ticket.
Mm-hmm.
You come home, and it's time to celebrate. What's the first drink you're pouring? What's the first whiskey you're pouring? To like, the rest of my life has changed forever. I'm celebrating. This is the glass of whiskey I want.
Colonel Taylor.
Wow.
No wrong answer, correct?
Okay. Colonel Taylor, really? How about, wait, now are you talking?
I'm talking about what I have in my stock right now.
Yeah, wait. Are we talking about what are we like, hey, yeah, you have to pick something downstairs
to
drink?
If I can pick anything I want, you're going out for the night. They have everything you could want behind the bar.
It's either going to be some Stag, or if they have some old Ripper Pappy. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Pappy Van Winkle.
Yeah.
So I've seen this documentary about the theft.
The Pappy game,
that whole thing.
Which, so, want to hear something really cool?
Yes.
So
always.
Okay. They talk about that they were taking barrels from Wild Turkey.
Yeah.
But they were only taking bottles from Trace.
Sure.
No. There's barrels that never got recovered. They were out there,
man. I would imagine.
And it's just like, I'm working on trying to get to be able to try some of that.
Yeah, I would. I think it was a Netflix series where they were doing crime show. They did an episode on like 4 different things. That was one of them. And it was really interesting.
I'm going straight Pappy 23. Or if you want to stick to Colonel Taylor, I'm going for the $20,000 bottle of Colonel Taylor Tornado.
I was only going by what I can lay my hands on. I hear the winning ticket and what's within arm's reach.
Well, both answers are great.
No, I'm just going straight. I'm going straight to Justin's House in Justin's House of Bourbon in Louisville. And I'm basically buying six $20,000 a piece bottles of the Tornado Colonel Taylor, and I'm going to share it with all my friends that night, and we're going to pour it like it don't fucking matter. That's what I would do.
Well,
that's a great
idea. If I hit the Mega Millions,
I'm not coming to your house. We're just drinking Colonel Taylor. I can come in.
I don't want you to come to my house, because if I hit the Mega Millions, me and Mrs. Xavier are going to be busy for a while. So, that's the first thing I'm going to do. Then I will have
a drink. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, but there you go.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's nothing better after that than a good drink.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that there's a Colonel Taylor. So they come out with different, like, four-grain, 18-year marriage. They're all different stuff that they've kept back some barrels, and they instead of 6-7 years for this, they age them longer. Every year they release a barrel proof that everybody wants, and that stuff sells for everything. But what happened is, one year a tornado ripped off the corner of the warehouse, the Rick House, and exposed barrels that were Colonel Taylor to the weather. So by the time they got it closed up and fixed, those barrels all had this unbelievable flavor because they were open air aged for like three, four weeks before they actually fixed the Rick House. Because one, a Rick House is balanced, you know, the whole thing, the way it's set up, it's got plums, it has to stay within balance so it doesn't collapse. So when it's damaged, you can't just go in there and they tarped it, but you just can't go in there and you got to do a bunch of shit to keep the stability going so the whole thing doesn't collapse.
Because of the great weight, you know, of all those barrels that are full of liquid, they weigh
tons. Yeah, they're going to be pretty heavy. They'll be a little heavy.
Real heavy.
All right. We'll get ready to finish up here. That was the question. What are you drinking?
What am I?
And you don't have to, it doesn't have to be whiskey, because, you know.
So here's the thing, man. Like, that's just it. Like, I'm an alcohol fan, in the sense, like I always say, like after a bad day, like after a tough day, I'm probably not going to come home and like get like two belts, right? But if things are good and we're celebrating, let's go get some drinks. Like,
yeah,
I'm that guy, right? Like I'm not necessarily drink every day guy. I'm not drink, watch the NFL alone on my couch guy. If we're going out socially, things like that. So if I was going to drink to celebrate, well, I like. Volume a little bit more maybe than I did, more. So I tend to be a little bit of a vodka drinker, both straight and mixed, but I would admit that would be a moment. Mega Millions moment would feel like a $200 whiskey glass thing. Again, I'm not necessarily a passionate cigar guy, but in a good round of golf, playing a really good course, I got a cigar going, maybe, you know what I mean, maybe a beer going in the cart, all of a sudden now I'm kind of pulled into it. Very same thing there. Like, that would feel like one of those moments of pour a really nice glass, sit there and reflect on the fact that your life is going to dramatically change forever because of this amount of money. And that, and I would almost want that really nice glass of whiskey to stabilize that moment of like, I need to wrap my head around this. Like, as much as it is fun, there's going to be a lot of undertaking here, and it's exciting. And I need to, like, study that shit.
So you win the Mega Millions, right?
Yeah. Your lips to God's ears.
All you have to do is call me, and I'll show up at your house with four different $500, $600 bottles of whiskey for you, and you pick them, and there we go.
I'll shop for you. Give me yours, I'll replace those, and then we'll be good.
I mean, I know a couple that... You know, that's one thing I do, tastings, you know, personal tastings for people, corporate tastings, and then also in-home.
You do corporate tastings, really?
Yeah, and then do in-home tastings also.
That's a really smart idea.
Yeah, there's just, it is a challenge if you got 20, 25 people, because the one, you need the glassware, you know, and you want to be impressive, and then patience. What you look for is, like, spin-offs off that. you know, someone is like, oh, I got some friends and whatever. So yeah. I do it reasonably. But
yeah, it's a good idea.
But I can get anything. It's just how much do you want to pay? They're like, what? I mean, if I had to and they wanted a full Pappy Line tasting, you know, and they got 10 grand, I'd probably show up with all the Pappies. They just have to have the money, you know.
10 grand. It's a lot.
I mean, there's some yeah, really old that, Scott. See,
there's a point you talk about perfection and obsession, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't spend 10 grand on whiskey if Kate Upton was going to sit on my lap and let me just sip it out of her.
So, bed. As a guy who's passionate about whiskey, there is a limit at even with money at your disposal where you'd be like, you know what? We're only going so far here.
That's exactly right.
No, okay. you're exactly right. But 2 years ago, it was right here, that limit. And, that and I got that right. limit up.
So wait another
he's
five.
The, he's the Antichrist.
Yeah, I got. We go to Kentucky.
At least the pusher. You know, I don't know about Antichrist.
Well, you know, it's like I used to think a car was a car until I got my Challenger, and now I'm a little more particular about it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I'm a golfer, so like, you know, people say a golf club is a golf club, and I will tell you, no, a Titleist T300 is something more than that. You know what I mean? No, I can't. Yeah,
my wife used to say whiskey is whiskey till I had her drinking bourbon, and then it's like I say, I've brought her over to the dark side.
Now exactly. She drinks Four Roses and thinks it's, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing how sure of something you can be when you don't know something. You know what I mean? And then the more you get into it, you're like, oh, I thought
that,
I knew,
but
that's, I
didn't. Isn't that the key to life? Just have an open mind?
Well, I believe so. You know what I mean? And that's, it's one of the reasons why when you asked me, I was excited because I was like, well, I'll at least learn one or two things.
Did you?
Yes, for sure.
Good.
Whether or not I'll remember it is another thing, but like, you know, we'll stay in contact and, you know, we'll get me a refresher course.
We will
course.
Stay in contact.
Yeah, we'll get me a refresher course, maybe.
Yeah, no problem. I have no problem with doing that.
Dude. Dan, thanks for sharing your time with us tonight.
No, I appreciate being asked, and, you know, hopefully we didn't, throw viewers off to the side.
No. Yeah, no.
What do you mean? That's the opposite.
Not so, at all. So, we're so glad to have you.
Happy to have been here.
So, everybody, we're the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. Check us out, www.scotchybourbonboys.com. Make sure everything Scotchy Bourbon Boys is there. Top right-hand corner, support us with Patreon. We've got individual tastings. We have Scotchy Bourbon Boys t-shirts, Glencairn's, all there. Support us, please. Remember, we are on all social media, all podcast media, whatever you listen to, we're there. And then also Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. Check us out there. Remember, subscribe, like, and comment. That really helps. Unless it's a negative comment. But those count too.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, that's how it works.
You know, some of my best, most popular podcasts are based off of messing up and just getting lambasted.
So so I tell people this story all the time. So Joe Rogan, who's obviously the biggest podcaster in the world, did that show from his house for 2 years with less than 5 people listening a day. That's a guy, dude, who was on Fear Factor, had been on news radio, had been a stand-up comedian, had a large audience already, and nobody was watching it because he was very early. And like one of the biggest Instagram influencers, I forget his name off the top of my head, he's African-American gentleman who's very funny, said it was a year posting videos every single day, no likes, no clicks, and then boom. And so when people ask me about this, you know, these kind of mediums having been in radio forever, I tell people all the time, I'm like, well, why people are successful is because they're the Indian rain dancers. They dance until it rains. Like, too many people think, I'm going to start the podcast, I'll be a star in a year. Mm-mm. And it's like, well, maybe, because that can happen for sure. Yep. Like, things can catch fire.
Yeah, well, you can get struck by lightning, too.
Exactly, yeah. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
But, dude, slow and steady wins most races, right? And so, like, if you just stay at something, and much like we were talking about the distillers, where passion meets obsession, that is that's hard to be denied. Like, there's no getting through that, or there's no denying that, essentially.
Right.
It's what I call the Jerry Seinfeld, Larry David thing, where it's like, when something's that real, and that coming from a place of that much passion and obsession, it's you won't be able to contain that.
Yeah, man, that's it. People want to listen to a podcast that they know next year is going to be there or whatever. They're looking for that consistency. And until you prove to them that you're consistent, and also the medium that you're, you know, portraying yourself on also wants you to be there. They're not looking to start running ads only for you to stop. They want to put it into the right place.
We actually picked up one additional listener. I'd like to give him a shout out. It's Kismet. My goodness, I'm going to apologize in advance for mispronouncing your name. Kismet Bismikvin? Is that how that's said? If it's not, million pardons, but thank you so much for joining us tonight.
But the very same thing is true with like eBay sellers. Like, it's all done by algorithm. And so, like, if you, the more often you are posting to your store, the more often eBay is going to push your results to the front of it. It's all run by user base. And like, and so like the more you help feed that, the more they help feed you. And so like, that's how the whole system's built.
Yeah.
It's an exciting time for entertainment. I mean, it really is.
We had a reel. It's just me thieving from a barrel.
Yeah. And thieving is where they knock, and these are legitimate terms you use. You use a bung hammer to hit the stave to pop the bung plug out of the bung hole. Then you put the thief in there. A thief is just like a siphon or a large copper straw. And then you put it's just like taking, when you were in grammar school, using a straw to take milk out of your milk carton. And he's just doing that and describing what he's doing.
And pouring it into a Glencairn.
That's all there is to it.
Now tell him how many views. 15 seconds, and then it's the first viral video. It's at 1.8 million. But, you know, all my other ones are at 1,000, 2,000. And when you watch 1,000 or 2,000 go, it's just like a couple hundred.
There's no rhyme or reason. Man.
But that is insane to watch. It's like,
for sure,
10,000, 15,000, 25,000. It just keeps going and going and does. And now it's slowed up, but it's slowed up at about 1.2. But it's picked up 600,000 more.
There's no rhyme or reason to what will catch. And so like, that's what's so interesting to watch now, is with all of these things that are going, is like people just are throwing so much at the wall. And like, it's almost becoming impossible to predict. It's like, you can look at something and laugh it off. And it's like, no, dude, tomorrow that's going to be the biggest thing in the world.
And some of the things, it's usually what you least expect. Like, most of all the things we did, that's probably the most bland video that Tiny's ever done.
It's
it's the one that everybody has jumped on.
It's the same thing.
Absolutely jumped on it.
It's been the same way with my radio career. Like, I think I come up with all these great things to say, and I have all these great opinions, right? And it's like, you do all these shows, and yet when somebody stops you in the grocery store, it's always like, dude, that day you couldn't remember the words to the national anthem was the funniest shit of all time. It's like, you know what I mean? Because because that's your real, right? Yeah. And that's who you, they see that real moment, and like, that's the connection. And so watching other people, watching everybody now, I mean, literally everybody does this now, is it's a very interesting time.
Yeah. And like you said, you probably have some fantastic shows that you just nail the shit out of it. It doesn't happen all the time, but you probably have really good content, really good guests.
You know they're good because people are coming back, but like, they're not necessarily the ones you hear about.
And right.
That's pretty wild.
And that day, it just wasn't the day, even though it should have been something that just went wild. That's not what goes wild. It's just the storm all of a sudden just matches up.
It's kind of like a songwriter. You can't pick. Like, you know what I mean? Like, right. A songwriter will tell you, like, sometimes they wish that song would have been the bigger hit, but it's like,
hey, they like them out, right?
Yeah. That's, people like what they like.
But at least they got that one in, and then everybody else listened to the others.
That's what I always say, man, especially nowadays, man. Like, there's so much competition for, you know, entertainment, especially ears these days. Like I said, audio listening's at an all-time high. If people are willing to spend even a little bit of time with me, I'm really appreciative with it or for it, because it's a hard thing to get people to do these days, man. There's a lot of, you know what I mean? I'm fending off YouTube and everything else.
And the thing is, the average person doesn't have a large percentage of that 24 hours to spend focusing on a podcast right. or a radio show or whatever. And so they tend to be choosy. What am I going to use? What little downtime I have?
Well, that's what I like about audio, too, is like yeah. I always say it's like you can do it while you're at the gym. You can do it while you're cleaning the house. You can do it while you're maybe working.
And see, that was a big thing. So many people were afraid that television was going to replace radio.
Yeah.
And it's like, no way, because there, you can have that radio going when you're mowing the yard. Or
you can multitask.
Whatever. Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
I get so many people talking about how they associate me with grass cutting. Because they yeah. listen to the podcast while they're cutting the grass.
Yeah, that's truck drivers and yeah, anybody who works outside. Right. Those are big audio listeners for sure.
All right, everybody. I think that's a great podcast tonight. Again, awesome thank podcast. You.
Thank
for,
you guys for having
thank
me.
Thank you, Dan.
I appreciate
again.
It. Thank you again.
So, all right. Good so to thank we're you. Gonna let little Steve-O take us out.
Little Steve-O, take it away.
Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. For if we don't find the next whiskey bar, I tell you we must die. I tell you we must die. I tell you, I tell you, I tell you we must die.
Oh.
Hey, Scotchy Bourbon Boys fans, this is Alan Bishop, Indiana's Alchemist of the Black Forest. So I'm tuning in here today to tell you all about the One Piece at a Time Distilling Institute channel on YouTube. If you're at all interested in the art of distilling, whether it be home distilling or professional distilling, and the intense geekery that goes into that process, then check out the One Piece at a Time Distilling Institute on YouTube. I promise you're going to learn something you didn't know before about the arts.